from Minneapolis. This is Stories and Stuff. I'm Joy Bubbles, your storyteller. The regular Stories and Stuff will resume next week. And today, we're going to talk about survival of child sexual abuse. Being, I know it's a sensitive subject, so I honor and respect your right to hang up at any time. But if you want to stay on, that's fine. It was a blind school, a school for the blind, a Catholic school in New Jersey, back in the fall of 1955. I think one of the things I remember most is the sound of that door closing. A lot of the nuns whipped me and my sister really hard, you know, and shook us. They'd whip us and with things, you know, metal things and stuff, and it would scabs and bruises and things like that, and shook us real hard. Only one did the sexual abuse, along with the bad touching. She used to have me get on the floor and pee in aluminum pans. I have no idea why. But I remember that door closing. She would, there was a padded table with steps, but instead of me stepping up, she would pick me up and put me on the table, and then she would go close the door, the thump of the door closing, and then she would get up on the table and lie down, and she showed me how she wanted to be touched down there, and would tell me about, and show me how to move my hands and everything, and that first time I remember, she was wanting deeper, deeper, and she was breathing hard, and my hands got gooey and wet. And afterwards, I wanted so, so much to wash my hands, to wash my hands. They stunk. But she wiped them with the Kleenex instead, and they stunk all class, and I could hardly wait. The thing I thought about most in the class is wanting to try to get my hands clean. After class, I went and started washing my hands, and I just couldn't get them clean. And I got caught by one of the other nuns and for washing my hands too long. And boy, I don't know what she was hitting me with, but I bled some, and there was some bruises and stuff the next day. But I thought about that, washing my hands. And luckily that weekend, my parents could pick me up, so I got to go home for a weekend. Me and my sister lived at the school. And I waited till I made sure everybody was asleep. And I decided to wash my hands with the strong Fab. I remember it was called Fab soap. And it was in the bottom kitchen cabinet. And I got it out, the box. And I remembered Mother showing me about the soap and how to work it. I wanted to play with it one time. I asked her what it was, and she was saying that you just use a half a cup full. To get the cup, they were in the upper cabinet. So what I did is I climbed up on the stool, and from the stool I could pull myself onto the sink, and then I stood up, and I was just barely able to reach the other cabinet, the way top, and I got the cup down, and I was so scared that I was going to spill it, you know. It was 4 in the morning, but I somehow managed to pour the soap powder into the cup and get half full and not spill a drop. And I washed my hands for a couple hours, and there was just not enough soap in the world to get my hands clean. And Mother woke up and found me. And what in the world are you doing at this hour? You know, it was like 6 by then, I think. And I told her I was trying to wash my hands and couldn't get them clean. And she said, oh, that soap is pretty strong for hands. You couldn't possibly have got them that dirty. What did you do to get them that dirty? How would you say? I didn't know what to say. So finally I said, oh, I touched an elephant. And she was real dirty, a big dirty elephant. Where in the world would you find an elephant? And I told her, on the table. But she, of course, thought I was just imagining or something. And, no elephant would be that dirty. But she let me play and wash my hands until breakfast. Another couple hours later, I think I washed on them for like 4 hours. Sometimes it's just not enough soap in the world to get your hands clean, you know. And that was, I've heard about that too. A lady was telling me about after her rape and the evidence gathering and everything, the thing she wanted most. She still remembers that 4-hour shower. Well, one day the nun had told me that if my parents found out how bad I was, they wouldn't want me anymore. And I asked some people what parents do when they don't want their children anymore, and, well, I guess they'd give them away. I think it was a kid, older kid, that told me. So when I got home one weekend, Daddy took me out for ice cream, which was kind of unusual, but he did, and I was so scared. It was different, and so I was afraid that he was really taking me to give me away. They found out that I was bad at that school, making mistakes in catechism and stuff like that and everything sometimes. And so I barely ate the ice cream, and I was trembling, and Daddy wondered what was wrong and everything. I didn't know how to say. And then the worst news of all, the nun told me that I was such a good boy and that my sister would go home for the summer, but I would stay with her and do training, which, of course, in that room with the door that closed and the table. So I knew I had to think of something to get out of that school. And lo and behold, I got a plan. You know, at night, I would hear the sound from the highway out the window. I'd hear the trucks. And I said, one of those trucks can get me out of this school. I got a plan. I said, I can go out there to that highway, and when the truck comes, I can jump out just then and fall on the street, and the truck will squish me, and I'll get out of that school. I won't ever have to go anymore, because I had heard about on the radio somebody getting run over by a truck, and they'd get killed that way. Sounds good to me. And just to give myself courage, I would hum to myself, I'm a man with a plan, I'm a man with a plan, I'm a man with a plan. I thought about it all night. And then as I rehearsed it, I said, no, I can't jump out when the truck comes. I've got to jump out just before the truck comes, so I'll already be in the street when the truck comes, because by the time I jump out, the truck will pass. And let's see, do I want to lay along the street or across? I said, no, I better lay across, because the wheels will have a better chance of hitting me. And I pretended like one of my toy trucks. I said, yeah, I'll be more in a position for it to get me good. So I went out that morning and picked my last dandelions, because I knew it would be my last morning. And as I got closer to where I heard the trucks, I started running. Wham! It wasn't a truck that hit me. I was hearing the sound of the truck coming to the highway, but it was coming through a fence. I didn't know that I wasn't hearing the trucks directly. It was coming through the holes in a fence, and that doggone fence was there, and it was in my way, and it was stopping me from what I needed to do, and I was so angry at that fence. And I followed it along and along and along, and all it did was curb and got me farther away from the trucks, and I followed it the other way, and it curved again, and I got so darn frustrated about it, I just fell on the ground and curled up and cried for a long time until the man that does the plants out there in flowers found me and just thought I was lost. They didn't know I was a man with a plan. But we later did get out of that school when my sister broke down and told Mother how much they were whipping her. I never, after all those years, told her about the other stuff. Well, later, as I was working through a lot of this stuff in the 90s, you know, as you get your strength and realize you're a victor and not a victim and not just a survivor but a thriver, and I was, the playgroup I went to, the mothers said, we got something special for you if you'd like. We want to surround you and set up a story circle, a listening circle for you, where you'll have all the time in the world, whatever you need, for whatever you need to tell, and we'll be listening and supporting you and here all the while. And so they did. They surrounded me and said, you're safe and protected here. And the kids could go down in the basement. They had a nice playroom with lots of toys down there and several mommies, the be play ladies down there. But three of the kids decided something different. They said, no, I want to be up with Joy Bubbles. And the mothers warned them, said, well, this is really heavy grown-up stuff, and about where he was hurted and everything. Yep, but if he was hurted bad, he's my friend and I want to be with him, Zach said. And Zach and Jennifer said, I am too. And Sherilyn said, me too. And so the mother said, all right, but, you know, feel free to leave whenever you want. I know. Well, we started, and it took me a while to start feeling safe and everything, even with them, people that I knew and cared about. And Zach left. I thought, well, I don't blame him, but instead of going downstairs, I heard something out in the hall. And we used to play soldier together, me and him, and he came back in a few minutes later and said, Commander-in-Chief, this is your general, sir. I wish to present our troops and assets. They are lined up for their in service for your protection. Do you wish to come out and inspect the troops, sir? You know, or something like that. He was very professional about it. He was 4 years old, and he knew how to talk soldier talk. So I went out, and there was wall to wall, not a gap for any alien threatening thing to get through, of the darndest collection of action figures, these guys with spiked boots, soldiers with lasers and phasers and master blasters and every known weapon known to alien or anybody else, spikes here and armor there. You never seen such an array. And I said, Dear General, I am extremely delighted and satisfied with the efficacy of our resources and assets. You have gone above and beyond the call of duty and something. And he said, now you know you're safe. And, you know, those figures and stuff spoke a special symbolic language to me, one child to another. And that's when I really started feeling safe in the next couple hours, that stuff came out that I had never told anybody before. A lot more stuff than here. And they were listening. But it wasn't till then, till I saw those little symbolic figures, that I felt safe and protected. Zach, a true child therapist. And one more example of working through this. One day, some friends in Australia, Joyce and a number of people in Brisbane, we did a play based on the South African Reconciliation and Truth Councils that they have, where the people that were tortured and stuff would come, and the perpetrators would come and admit what they had done and tell, you know, and beg for forgiveness and talk about, you know, what had happened. The victims would tell how much they had been hurt and what had happened to them, and the perpetrators would listen and have to hear through all that and apologize as best they could. Well, that's what the play was based on, except this was the nun that had abused me. And I was myself and other supportive people were in there telling their stories on that South African model. And the person playing the nun really had been a nun in real life outside the play, too. And I told my story, and the nun listened. And when it came her turn, she cried and told that, yes, she had done that, and those things were true, and people should believe me because she had done it. And she was very, very, very sorry, and knowing that can't undo anything, but she's deeply hurt and troubled by the things she had done that can never be taken back. And she doesn't deserve forgiveness. So later in the play, we had lunch together. And I decided after all the years of work that I was ready. I broke off a piece of my bread and gave it to her, and she broke off a piece of her bread and gave it to me. And I told a sister, I said, this is a gift to myself. I forgive you, sister, because I don't want to carry this any longer. And I'm not forgiving you for you. I'm forgiving as a gift to me. And she said, I know I don't deserve forgiveness, but I'll accept it anyway. And she said, I can't undo it, but I'm deeply, deeply sorry for all the hurt I've caused you. And she admitted to abusing a number of other boys. And after the play, she said that in real life, the abuse she talked about when she was a child in the play that she told about as a nun really happened to her. They would lock her in a clothes dryer and hold the door closed. She tried to push her way out. They would hold it and tell her that any minute, if she didn't pray hard enough, God would tell them to turn it on with all the heat and everything and leave her in there, in it. And she was screaming prayers desperately, and they would do all kinds of other things. So anyway, a lot of people, you don't have to forgive unless or until you're ready, and even then, you may never want to do that because, you know, you only do what you're ready to do. You know what I wish? I wish every abuse survivor and thriver in the world could know, I mean inner know, it isn't your fault. It never was. It's nothing wrong with you. It's wrong with the perpetrator. They're one of the ones that are sick. It's not your fault, and you did the very, very, very best you could at the time. Yes, you know now strong things that you could have done, wise things that you could have done. But you remember, you know, you were who you were then. That's all you were then. I was 6 1/2. I couldn't have done anything different then other than say yes to the sister when I so much wanted to say no. Now I know how better to say no, and maybe I do things differently now. But you know, you were only who you were then. And you know what? You did the very, very best you could at the time. Because all you could be then is who you were then. And yes, you did the very, very best you could at the time. And it's not your fault. Well, in all the healing work you're doing, don't forget to take some time to play. This is really scary for me to do this week, even more so because a support group in Melbourne, where about 60, in Australia, 60 or 70 people show up, and they normally divide up, and they're coming together to listen to this thing over the phone. Isn't that scary? This is one of the hardest things I've ever done. So like I said, while you're doing all this work, take some time to play and be somebody special, be yourself. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. And remember, next week the regular stories will resume. Call back then. Bye now.
At the tone, please record a voice message. Press the pound key when finished. To send your message with normal delivery, press 1. To send your message with special delivery, press 2. To review your message, press 3. To re-record your message, press 4. To continue your message, press 5. Or to cancel your message, press the star key. Make your selection now. Thank you for using Fillmore Productions voicemail. For more information on Fillmore Productions voicemail or to get your very own Fillmore voicemail box, please call 1-866-4-GET-VMB. That's 1-866-443-8862. Thank you for calling. To transfer to another mailbox, enter the last four digits of the box number and press the pound key. Press the star key to exit. Make your selection now. I'm sorry, that was an invalid response. Please try again. To transfer to another mailbox, enter the last four digits of the box number and press the pound key. Press the star key to exit. Make your selection now. I'm sorry, that was an invalid response. Please try again. To transfer to another mailbox, enter the last four digits of the box number and press the pound key. Press the star key to exit. Make your selection now. I'm sorry, that was an invalid response. Please try again.